So welcome everyone. It's late going here, but after all this, you know, when we just use like pen and paper and just stand up like, but now we're into high tech. But I want to thank you for coming. And when I was asked by the conference, based on inquiries they've had and comments and all that about members of the church who are interested in ministering to refugees, they thought about me. A couple of people know where I work. And so I was happy. I said, sure, I'll pass whatever information, give whatever help I can. In my introduction last night, I mentioned years ago, working in Canada for many years, working in different offices, insurance, Ontario Legal Aid, wherever, I felt I needed to work to do a kind of work where, at the end of the day, I felt that I've helped. It's not that what I was doing I wasn't helping, but I find like in the regular office job, yeah, they just concern, okay, did you finish doing all of these files, did you know? And so I decided, I said, you know what, I should check out and see what's available, like what course I can take that would give me this more of a human touch. And so I did study business education at Andrews University, and that's how I got into office and everything like that. And so I decided to get this, I went back to Canadian University College and studied behavioral science. And the courses that I did there convinced me that what I wanted to do, I was on the right course. Sociology, that's studying cultures and customs. Welfare, like social welfare. Counseling adults, counseling children. And all these sort of social work, all of that is involved in a behavioral science degree. And I was beginning to feel, yes, I'm on track. So shortly after graduation, the first resume I put out got the job, and God has been good. 11 years this year, I'm still there. It's been very satisfying and rewarding because I work at the Immigrant Center in Red Deer, and that's where the world comes to you. So meet people from all different cultures and customs and everything. But I think the biggest thing is when they come as regular immigrants, as refugees, they come with the need, and you help helping them fulfill the needs, helping them to reach their goals that they want to meet in life. So today, to start out, I thought instead of just plunging into ministering to refugees and the other aspect of it, give a little bit of a background. Canada, we know, let me see how I do this one here. Whoops. How do I get it? Okay. There we go. So I have to learn how to use this one. Give a bit of early immigration. And according to...
Are we going to be able to get this PowerPoint from you later?
I can. This one doesn't have... I didn't go through all the line-by-line details. But if... Sure. If you want it. Yeah. Okay. So according to Citizenship and Immigration, Canada, when Europeans explored Canada, they found the native people here occupying all regions of the land. And I'm sure by now we all know that. But you had in the early, as early 16s and 1700s, there were French settlers. So most Quebecers are from coming back from way back when. And then the European settlers came and settled in the Maritimes. And then the black loyalists from the U.S. I'm sure you have heard of the Underground Railroad. They came because they were fleeing oppression and discrimination and all the other stuff that went on there in the Deep South. And then in the late 70s, refugees from Scotland, just showing a picture here of when some of these refugees arrived in Union Station in Toronto, Canada. And you can see they just have their stuff in their bags, because most times when you flee, you just, some people don't, not even able to grab anything, you know, it's just run. And it continued in the 1800s from Poland to escape Russian oppression, Ukraine. And those of us here in Alberta know how many Ukrainians are out here in the West. They were fleeing as well, thousands of, I mentioned the Underground Railroad. And then more people from Central Europe, then we had the Arabs, Jews, Hungarians. So Canada, the early history, Canada was built by immigrants. And so it continues today. In 1969, the Canadian government made a big change, and that's where thing was signed, an agreement was signed that refugees would no longer have to return to their country of origin if they had grounds to fear persecution. And so it really opened up. Now, up until that time, most of the refugees, as I show there, came from Europe. And then a little later on, you had in the 1970s, as you'll see later, that changed a bit. Now, there were government restrictions. And Canada right now is known to be a peaceful country, and it is, and we're peacekeeping and everything like that. But the early immigrants did not have it easy. The government put a lot of restrictions, and again, because most of the people who were here were from the European countries. So you have like the Chinese Immigration Act of 1885. And that one was, it was the first piece of Canadian legislation to exclude immigrants on the basis of their ethnic origin. And they put a head tax on the Chinese, $50 per person. And then they later increased it to $100 per person. So you can see with the restrictions that would have kept immigration to quite a low. Then he had the Royal Commission on Italian Immigration, 1904-5, and that was established to investigate the exploitation of Italian laborers. That wasn't so much by the government, but companies were taking advantage of the Italians who immigrants that were here, and so the government had to do something. Then the Immigration Act of 1906, there were more restrictive immigration policies put in place. And the order in Council 1911-1924, that one, it was a campaign to block black settlement in Canada. For those of you who don't know, well, you hear of black people in Nova Scotia and the Maritimes. But right here in Alberta, there was black settlement. There is one just not too far from Rimby, around Warburg, where black people from the States came and settled. Yeah, and then the Order of Council 1931, that one was the tightest immigration restriction ever. However, in 1922, the Empire Settlement Act was put in place. That one, British and Americans were allowed to come and settle as long as they had the money, and they can farm, do farming. In the 1970s, that's when Canada really opened up to other ethnic groups, and that's when I came to Canada under Pierre Elliott Trudeau. So the current Prime Minister, his dad, when I came to Canada, he was in power. He started multiculturalism. So now we can enjoy the festivals in Edmonton and Calgary, all those nice cultural festivals. It's because of Prime Minister Pierre Elliott Trudeau that put into act the multiculturalism. So as to all the different ethnic groups in Canada, you can celebrate your culture, your heritage, without feeling, you know, that you have to restrict it. And at the same time, you adopt the Canadian culture. So that's, it opened up to Chileans, Latin Americans, you name it, Africans, Iranians, and that's when the boat people. For those of you, some of you may remember in 1979, I think that would have been like the real big modern day refugee thing that took place in 1979. The company I work for in Red Deer, in 79 when they came, several came to Red Deer. Didn't know where they were going, but they came to Canada and somehow they got placed in Red Deer. And it was through the goodness of the hearts of Christian churches in Red Deer. The members took them into their homes. Who didn't have space in their homes, they tried and see how they can accommodate them in their churches and everything like that. Well, so many of them came in that it was too difficult for those church groups to handle. And so they said, well, somehow we need to form an organization and get working with the government and everything like that. That's how the company I work for, Central Alberta Refugee Effort, that's how that got started. And so they, with the government and other organizations that were willing to fund the different aspects of settlement, that's how that got started. So it, and the company has grown now to 50-something employees. When I started 11 years ago, it was just about 20-something employees. So it has really doubled. And they offer all sorts of services to help them get settled. So West Indians, which I'm one, who came to Canada between the late 1960s and 70s, they didn't come as refugees, but under other classes of immigration. Most of them came as domestic workers. And the men, most of the men who came from the Caribbean, they worked on the trains as porters. I'll just take a minute here, as I say, because I'm a settlement practitioner there. A few years ago, maybe about 4 years ago, I got a call out to the front desk, the reception desk, and there were these two gentlemen. They came and they were wanting to see me. And so took them into the office, and in talking to them, found out that they're from St. Lucia in the Caribbean. I'm from St. Vincent, so St. Lucia is just across the waters from where I'm from. And so I said, how may I help you, and whatever. They were working here, they're construction workers, very talented men. I've seen stuff in magazines that they've built back in the Caribbean, and they were hired here in Canada for the summer. So they wanted to know how, you know, they would like to stay, if there was a possibility. So one of the guys told me, he said, we were told that we can apply as refugees. So I just looked at them and I had quite a laugh. I said, forget about the idea. I said, can you imagine you sending an application in to Citizenship and Immigration? You're from the Caribbean claiming refugee status. For what? I mean, they know. People go there, they go there for their vacation, right? What reason are you giving for refugee status? I said, don't know. Don't. Go apply based on your experience. You're skilled workmen and you've been hired here, so there are other ways you can. But they said, you know what, you're right. I said, yeah, what reason are you going to give them for claiming refugee status, not coming from there? So I had quite something. Okay. So this picture I have here is showing the modern day refugees. We all heard about the Syrian refugee crisis that's been going on, and it's not just Syria. Unfortunately, a lot of other countries like Sudanese and all of those who are drowning in the big high seas and everything, they seem to have gotten forgotten because the Syrian thing has taken over. But I thought I would show there where I work. We deal with a lot of Syrians that come and helping the families with settling. So today, most immigrants come from China, Philippines, and India. And
Ruby, I don't know the stats for today, but in 2015, the Philippines, for 5 years running, had been the biggest contingent of immigration to Canada.
Yeah. And it is, yeah. And you can see it reflected in a lot of the temporary foreign workers are from the Philippines, whether it's fast foods or whether a lot in the health field, healthcare field as well. A lot of them are really trained. You know, there's one thing, and tomorrow I'm going to talk about myths and facts about immigrants and refugees. So it's amazing the concept some people have of immigrants when they come. So tomorrow you'd want to hear some of the things.
Can I just ask why are they coming from the Philippines if they're guys? What is the reason that they're coming from? Is it bad to live in the Philippines?
That I don't know. With the economic condition, but I think the Harper government had some sort of agreement with India, China, and Philippines when they were in power. So.
Yeah, I'm from the Philippines.
Okay.
The major reason is there is a very high unemployment rate in the Philippines, so they want to go to a greener pasture.
Yeah.
That's why they come.
Which is like just about every immigrant looking for a better life. But as I say, a lot of them that come, they are well educated, they're skilled in the healthcare field and other aspects. And so I think, and the Philippines, they seem to have very good, they have agencies that provide a lot of good training in preparing their residents.
I think if they're not skilled and they're unemployed, they have a very hard time coming, because I hear it costs a lot to come.
Right. So they have to go through the process, like citizenship, the government deals with that. They're screened like everybody else, so they have to go through the screening process and to be qualified and everything, for whatever jobs they're coming for.
And there's a strong ethnic driver, because Filipinos, Filipinas, have traditionally borne a responsibility to their families. Mm-hmm. So they're all in the Middle East, mm-hmm. Hong Kong, China, of course now Canada, mm-hmm. Parts of Europe, and the remittances, the money they send back to the Philippines,
right.
is the single largest determinant for the Filipino economy.
To help, yeah.
It's extremely important to the Filipino family to take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. And they'll come out for years without yeah. seeing their family,
right.
sacrificing just to make sure that they take care of their family.
Right.
But ultimately, of course, then they get status and they get family coming in. So that starts to drive then the large numbers
right.
as more people and children and other family members get to come to Canada.
Exactly.
And of yeah. course, someone's here listening, but they have a tradition of very hard work.
Yes,
so
they are. While I was doing my studies at CUC, I worked to finance my way through school. I worked with a agency, a company in Red Deer that had group homes. And some of the, like in most group homes, you have like three, four workers or at least three people on shift at a time. And I'll tell you, the best people I worked with were the Filipinos. When I go get to that house and I see who is going to be on shift, if it's a Filipino, I felt really good. Because they come, they put their stuff down, and we go to work. On the other hand, I've had shifts where, not wanting to offend anybody, I've worked with a white Canadian, Caucasian, whatever. And they come in, "Hi Ruby, okay, so what's on for supper?" Whatever, you see it, yeah? Go out, smoke, 15 minutes, come back, talk 10 minutes, go on the phone, talk for another 20 minutes, go back out, smoke, 15 minutes. And I'm saying, okay, so am I the only one supposed to be working here today? Because all I'm seeing is on the phone and smoking, and then, okay, time to feed. So the ethic, the work ethic is really, really strong.
Uh-huh. Also, when they start here, they don't have to have high skill level. From Labrador to British Columbia, if you go into fast food, that's who's going to be serving you. Mm-hmm. So they are trained on the job for the... Mm-hmm. Those that don't have an education, a lot of them do have an education,
mm-hmm.
but those who just want to come and get started and send some money home, we have all kinds of opportunities. Long-term care uses a lot too.
Right, exactly.
They're just various. And then they go on because they're very intelligent, looking for education.
Exactly.
And they don't stay in the fast food.
No, and hard workers. And as you did, I'll be with you in a minute. As I say, there's certain myths that people have about immigrants coming is that they come, they're uneducated, they're so poor, it's the first time they're seeing whatever, so they take anything. And it's a myth. A lot of immigrants who come here, like everybody else, they're looking for a better life, but they come, they're trained. You have physicians driving taxis. Okay, you have registered nurses who are working in fast food places because their credentials are not recognized until they go back to school. So those are some of the myths people have, and until they get to know, you know, who people are, I know you've had your hand up for a long time.
I just hope over the course of this that you'll address why the government's moving more and more towards temporary foreign workers instead of allowing an immigration, because I know in our town it's causing a lot of upheaval and also a lot of broken hearts.
Okay.
Just if you could tell us what the thinking will be behind that.
I wish I knew, but I'll do that where that can cover. Wednesdays. Yeah. Okay. So the majority of Canada's population growth is due to immigration, because Canadians having like 1.5 children, the population isn't going to go very far. Okay, so that's giving you some idea there with the growth, the overall immigration numbers and the averages there. You see the levels in 2017 is just about the same as 2016, and with immigration numbers. And government-assisted refugees, their levels there, the highest was in 2016, if you remember, when the Prime Minister announced about helping 25,000 Syrian refugees to come. So that really took the level right up, but it's sort of gone back down right now, 2017. So,
we sort of get the picture of refugees making them, but when it's only like 5,000 people out of 300,000, you're saying basically are refugees.
I'm sorry?
That's like only, usually on an average year, then only 5,000 people out of 300,000 immigrants are refugees.
Are refugees.
Yeah.
So it's, I know last year when they announced the 25,000, it's where you go, you know, I read they got a few that came, and but it spread out through. But if people know the history, I mean, Canada's been taking in refugees for years, as I showed back there. So it's, I think it's because it's such a big wave that came, it came as a tsunami to us, sort of.
And yet, by contrast, we have no conception of what it means. In Lebanon, the population is 3 million. There are over a million refugees. That's over a third of the population has just turned up as refugees. It's like if 11 million people turned up in Canada.
Oh, my.
We would absolutely panic.
Yeah, I know.
So we really don't understand what it is.
Exactly, and especially the countries that are so much smaller. I mean, Canada is the second largest country, and when your country isn't as large and you have like half of your population or maybe more showing up, that would be really, really overwhelming. Yeah. So in 2016, Canada's population 35.2 million, and there was an increase of 1.7 million from 2011. That's according to the latest census that was taken. New permanent residents, 300,000. Now, new permanent residents, that can include some refugees who will get who would have gotten their status, but that also includes regular immigrants. Tomorrow, you're going to learn, I'm going to share immigrants, refugees, who are they? So there is a difference, and myths and facts, and there's going to be a video that I'm going to be showing that you can come, and as you come throughout the week, there's going to be group activity and that sort of thing. So I hope, tell others around, come and learn. The main purpose for this seminar this week is to help our church get more involved. It's amazing, as I did research for this, the different denominations, I should say, out there, the different churches, whether it's United Church or whatever, who are active in finding ways to help refugees with settlement. And I'm saying, where is our church? nowhere Seventh-day Adventists mentioned. So this is something like Thursday, Friday, ministering to newcomers, settlement needs, you're going to learn about being a welcoming and inclusive community. It can be done as you can do it as an individual, or you can get your church involved and say, you know what, what can we do? So there's going to be opportunity for brainstorming ideas, all that sort of stuff, and come up with thing. You'll hear how other groups and churches are getting involved, and that might help to stimulate some thought of what in your community. If your community church, your church isn't doing anything towards that yet, this is something that maybe you can take the initiative and get a group and get. And it doesn't have to be done alone. And that I'm going to explain, like our agency, we there to provide. So it's not that if your church gets involved that you will have to provide them with everything. That's why you have organizations like ours that we, and I'll tell you what some of the services we provide, that if you were to get involved in helping immigrants or refugees when they come into your community, the community resources that are available to help you along.
Do you have that just for Red Deer, or do you do a wide area?
We provide services for Red Deer and surrounding areas. So the smaller communities, they access.
So will Lacombe have their own?
Immigrant services, most immigrants who are there, they contact us in Red Deer. Yeah, yeah. There are a few things like the neighborhood place in Lacombe, but I don't think they deal so much with immigrant settlement issues. So for those who live in Lacombe, if they want to study like English as a second language, or they want other information, help, resources, yeah, they can. All right. So is there anyone in here who thought of or had ideas about wanting to see a welcoming and inclusive community in there? Oh, so.
Well, it occurred to me we've been praying for ways to reach the Muslim community mm-hmm. for years and years.
Okay.
And here these people are coming to our very little towns and to our doorstep.
Yeah.
And it occurred to me, what better way than to build a bridge to them, and then they can explain to their families back home or whatever
exactly
what God is about. So that's yeah. the reason I'm sitting here, is I find the people most open
mm-hmm.
To when they're going through the turbulence they're experiencing now. But just to mention, I noticed in the review that the Adventists in Europe that are assisting the immigrants, some of them are experiencing great deal of hostility and pushback from their peers in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would anticipate there might be some of that in our little redneck towns as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm sure you're going to give us ways to deal with that.
Yes, yes, yes. So, yeah. No, so that would be, let me see if I have, oh, okay. So I think, right, so tomorrow we're going to deal with immigrants, refugees, the difference, the myths and facts, and some things might really put a spark in you as we progress towards, I just thought I would do this to give you more of a background, more of a wider, so that when we get to God, because to ministers, like everything else, you get a better reception if you reach out to someone with a loaf of bread than if you just go and bang them over the head with what you believe, right? So it's the same it's the same process in how to go about ministering. So we did, I just thought I'll give you, feed you some food.
Just one question. Like, I can't help noticing our pastor here, I'm Pastor Okoro, mm-hmm. and we know his journey to try and have his wife to immigrate to his country.
Okay.
And I just wonder, is there something like quotas or something we don't even know about, kind of an underground decision on who gets to come based on ethnicity or even perhaps religion? Like, have you observed any patterns like that?
There might be. I can't say that for sure that there is. Could be in the government offices, could be they do have quotas. But I know a lot of time, especially with me dealing with applications for immigration, you have to be so careful because they're there. If you put any sort of a conflicting information, you may put a certain information. You may put, okay, I met my wife on such and such a date and such and such a place. On her application, the same question might be asked, but in a different manner. And there is any sort of a reason to question, that depends on who is dealing with an application. That can make a difference. So there's so many little things, and they look to see how long two people have been in a relationship before they got married, all that sort of stuff, proof. They want pictures of your wedding. They want to know if your family knows your spouse, etc., etc., etc. So there's several things that prevents one from getting through. For instance, I've been dealing with a young lady. She came as a refugee from Liberia. They had a civil war there, and she had a little baby, and when the rebels just overtook the village one day, she was cooking in the kitchen. The husband was in the living room with the little baby, and next thing they heard a woo, and before she knew it, they were with machetes and everything like that. And so she took out through the back door. They came to the front. They met the husband with the child. They killed the husband. That's what she found out later. The little baby, she wasn't sure whether that child was alive or dead. So she took off, and several other people who were in her village took off. They originally from Sierra Leone, and they walked through the jungle for days. During the night, because if they do it during the daytime, they might be seen. And until they got to Sierra Leone, to Liberia. And it's from there, they were in refugee camp and whatever, and she ended up being accepted to come to Canada. But she didn't know, she heard, of course, she knew the husband would have been killed, but she didn't know about the little boy. Until just a few years ago, here, a friend of hers from Red Deer went home to visit and was inquiring, and she mentioned about her friend here who lost whatever, and they said, there is a little boy living with such and such a person, and they just found him as a baby, and they were... So, in all this search and research, she found out it was her son, and she believed it was her son. So I worked with her, got DNA done. So the point I wanted to make was, when she filled the application to come to Canada, she did not put her son's child name because she didn't know whether the child was alive. So do you know? Do you think she can get him into Canada now? We're working right now, is an immigration lawyer that's trying to help her because she got DNA done. They did DNA with her. Well, how do you know it's your son? Why didn't you put her and him on the application? Sent letter of explanation, that still didn't convince them. And so the DNA results came back 99.999, put how many nines you want behind 99, and that still did not convince them. I was shocked when it came back and they said, you know, based on whatever we deny the application. So I said, you know what, let's go through immigration lawyer and see if they can, because so the MP in Red Deer and everybody is trying, because the DNA proof is her child. And the reason is, you know, there was a civil war and whatever. You admitted her as a refugee. So why is it so? But sometimes I think bureaucracy is just like, well, the child's name is not on the application, so we deny the application. Like, reason goes out the door. Yeah, so there's so many things. There is so many. Yeah, it's one of those things that if they have, I met another couple who approached me in Red Deer, and he had a child before he got married to this lady, and they had other children. So he didn't put that child's name on the application because he thought it's just his wife and children, they're coming as a family. But on the application it says you should put your family members, whether they are accompanying you to Canada or not. And so now this daughter is there, 12 years old, and he can't get her here. So there's so many things, yeah, that that people have to be careful about, yeah. But yeah. So I hope that was, I think my time has been spent, but if any more questions?
I'm not sure, you might cover this in another day, but with all the confidentiality stuff now, if somebody was to want to do something, like to go about knowing who is new and you know, you want to do a welcome kit type thing to a house, how would you go about getting that information? Like, you would have to just kind of, how
would you know? You mean to know who is new in the community?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that would be, well, again, I think for most ethnic refugees or ethnic immigrants in your community, you will see them. It's either if they're from Syria or one of the middle, they'll be wearing their thing. Others might be hard to detect. I mean, unless it's a black person like me.
They could have grown up here.
I know.
Yeah.
And you made a very good point. I've had my daughters being asked, so where are you from? My daughters were born here. Where are you from? And my younger daughter said Toronto, and the other one, my big daughter was born in Red Deer, and the other one in Toronto. And they were asked, we were in the park in Red Deer, and they said, but where are you actually from? So I told my husband, I said, listen to the conversation behind us, because the girls are walking in the back. And they said, we are from Canada. But where are you really, really from? And I'm saying, like, are they thinking that because these are two black girls that they can't be Canadian born?
So people ask me all the time, what is my background?
Yeah.
And I will say German.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, I know that's my heritage.
Yeah,
but
you see, that's different. That's still different. If they ask you what's your background, then if they're asking you where you're from, is that, well, you can't be from Canada. If they ask you your background, they can say they're of Caribbean heritage because their parents are from the Caribbean, but they are not from the Caribbean.
And that's probably what they mean.
Could be that's what they mean, you know.
Use the same term sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
And
so,
you don't want to offend somebody.
Right.
You know, just because you might not look the same as I,
yeah,
doesn't mean that you haven't been here for years.
Right, right. So, I know, it's a tricky one. It's a tough one. I guess a person, you just have to...
Be in tune, I guess.
Yeah, and you'll have to just watch your questions and maybe saying, so where are you from, or something like that. Find a different approach that you'll get the answer. It's hard to say that there is any right way to ask or right question to ask.
And how long are they still considered a refugee?
Someone that needs to be helped.
Yeah. For instance, the government-sponsored refugees, they receive... Well, the truth is, they're refugees when they get accepted here. Like, they receive support from the government for up to a year. And for people who want to sponsor, refugees coming, they're responsible for them up to a year.
Now, what about their medical and everything? Like,
the government and all of that, they, because their forms, and it's part of the process.
If I were to sponsor somebody, like, would they have medical coverage like I have? Just normal, they can go to a doctor?
Oh, you mean like when they come here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, they are entitled, because once they're approved, they become permanent residents, they are entitled to medical stuff. Right. Well, you could. The sponsors need to get them all the care, whether it's health care, housing. If you're sponsoring alone, or if you're sponsoring by a group, mm-hmm. or a group of five, that's usually one of the best ways to go. So the group of five, which I'm going to explain later during the week, there you see on your schedule, they have certain procedures to follow, and they have to outline on a special application form their finances and everything. Because if you're taking it on as private sponsorship, then financially you're responsible to get them settled into the different things. There's some things immigrant serving agencies like ours would help with, like English as a second language, or if you need, you know, help with certain things. But like when a person or a group takes on sponsorship, then it's a commitment for up to a year. So I'll be covering that later. All of that is on the government website.
For private too?
Yes. For private sponsorship, for a group of five, government-sponsored refugees, all of that is on the...
Just Immigration Canada?
Okay. So, I know. I have... That's going to be on one of the slides, but I'll give it to you. www.cic. .gc.ca. Yeah, so that's their website. There is a phone number, and it's like it takes you forever in case you have questions. It takes you now. you call and said, the waiting time is 45 minutes, right? So I've given up on calling them. So if you check the website and you click on the immigration tab at the top, and you'll see the different categories there, and you click on that category for refugees, and you'll see. Yeah, they have the forms, the application forms, the supporting documents they need. If you plan to do any sponsorship, what you need, there is a settlement plan, that group of five, each person in that group has to live in the same community as the refugee is going to be resettled into. And the group of five, they have to agree on the finances and everything to take care of those refugees for the first year. You can extend it. I think it all depends on the relationship that develops after a person sponsors a refugee or refugees. It can be extended up to 36 months.
Then they can stay. They're legally able to stay after that 1 year sponsorship, or does it depend on their ability?
Oh yeah, no. When you sponsor them, they get approved. The government approves your application for sponsor and approve them coming. They get their permanent resident status. Yeah. So your support is to help them get on their feet. Yeah. So that's why the government gives up to a year to give them that support and that help.
If they can't take care of themselves after that, then sponsor still, or do they go on welfare, or what? So
no, it's up to the discretion of the sponsor. If you see that they're making the effort, and that's what you want them, is to help them to get independent, not to depend on you, the sponsor, forever.
Or the government, really.
Or the government. The government-sponsored ones, the government would give them monthly allowance to help them get on their feet. For the first year. But after that, they basically, and that will be covered throughout the week. That money they get is not free money. So I won't get into that now, because that's going to be another presentation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. So I hope I have some handouts here based on. So you can have for your own, as your own info.
Thank you.
So if we wanted to have an immigrant caregiver, say, for a family member, and we wanted them to be from the same faith background as we are, mm-hmm. Is there any way at all that a person can go do that, or is that considered discriminatory?
If the person... As long as the person meets approval to be a refugee, they have that person. If you're sponsoring a person, the person has to be approved by the United Nations Council for Refugees. So I don't think religion would.
But doesn't refugee mean that they would have to have some issue, like they were in danger in their
yes.
own country?
Yes.
So it would have to fill that criteria
yes.
before you could narrow it down.
Yeah. If it's as a refugee, but if it's a regular immigrant, mm-hmm. a person to come here as an immigrant, then that's a totally different application.
Okay. Because yeah. I always wondered if you specified if you wanted a Seventh-day Adventist caregiver, if that is immediately ruled out as
well,
kind of discriminatory or...
Because
you can see lifestyle-wise, that would be such a much better fit, right?
My suggestion would be... Sorry. There's two there. My suggestion would be, if it's somebody specific that you want... because of religion type thing, is that don't specify Seventh-day Adventist on the application.
Specify the person you wanted to.
Yeah, it's an application because they have applications for live-in caregivers. Mm-hmm. But you will have to prove that you couldn't find someone in Canada to do the job. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's on the website too that you can check.
Thank you.
And again, you couldn't find a Seventh-day Adventist, I suppose. That would be the same thing. In other words, to prove that you couldn't find somebody doing the job in Canada,
yeah,
you couldn't say, I couldn't find a Seventh-day
Adventist. I won't suggest you do that.
Yeah.
Because I won't suggest that you put that as front and foremost as part of the application.
To prove that you couldn't find someone in Canada to do it.
Not everybody wants to do caregiver work. So it's not that it's impossible to find.
Or live in Hinton or wherever.
A friend of mine, just last week, a daughter caregiver come from the Philippines. So she was just here 1 week.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know the process that they went through, but she just arrived and the mom has.
Yeah.
I don't think she's Adventist. I don't think, but I never asked that question. But she was here at camp
right.
yesterday.
So I think if there is an Adventist that, you know, that you, and I understand faith-based, so that's how I would feel too if I need a caregiver, you're basically applying for the person. Once you prove that you, and I think what they do, you have to put ads out for a caregiver, and then you'll tell after the allotted time that you couldn't find and you're applying for this person. But if you indicate it's because you want a Seventh-day Adventist, yeah.
Even the conference has to do that if they're hiring, say, they need a Korean pastor.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's no one in Canada.
Right.
They have to advertise
yes.
In the ads publicly.
Yes.
For this position.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You have to.
By law, you have to.
Yeah. You have to, and if you didn't get any response, then
appropriate
response. You can get a response, but maybe if that person doesn't meet the other criteria or whatever criteria, you can use that, right?
Maybe you can define your own criteria then in such a way.
Exactly, based on your needs.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you didn't find someone. But on the website, yeah. If you click on, what category is that on there now? So it's the immigration tab, and you'll see the drop-down box. And I think Live-In Caregivers has its own category there. Or you can click on work. If you click on work, I think Live-In Caregiver comes under that subtitle. And then there is an instruction guide with all the application packages for the different categories. There is an instruction guide that explains to you everything. Okay, so thank you very much for coming, and let the other folk know that we'll be here for the rest of the week covering different aspects.
So before you go, shall we pray together?
Yes, thank you.
And thank you so much for coming. We continue the service in the afternoon.
Yes, this afternoon. Yes.
But tomorrow again, we continue the second.
Yeah, through a different, yeah, different topic. Okay, yeah.
So please invite us. Many people as you can, because in our churches we do often see people who are migrating to this country,
mm-hmm.
and this is an opportunity for us to learn how we can be of help for them and the family members that may be remaining abroad. So shall we pray together? Father, we thank you that we could come together. We thank you for Ruby and the wonderful presentation that she's given out. We ask that your blessings will be upon each one of us as we work together in the communities to help those who are in need. For we pray these things in the name of Jesus. Amen.
Amen. Thank you. Okay.
So I think the button up there will be, we'll do it. Yes, that one. Yeah, that one's good. Yeah, that's good.
So which one we stop?
This one up there. It stopped already.
Oh, yeah. Said record now.
Saying record now?
Yeah.
Hold on. Actually, it's still going. This one. Okay, this one.
I think it showed where after.